For 36 years, the Goldman Environmental Prize has celebrated everyday heroes who are showing us that every action has the power to turn apathy into positive change for the environment. Heroes like Bastiana Gurri and Olsi Nika, who helped create Europe's first Wild River National Park. Visit us at goldmanprize.org to discover the stories of this year's Goldman Environmental Prize winners. And learn how when it comes to protecting our planet, the doing makes the difference.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Spiegel and Holmes, afternoons on the Score.
I mean, we're in a pretty good spot, and like we faced a lot of really good starting pitching, and I think we have the most runs scored in baseball, which is pretty cool. Like, it seems like every time I look at the schedule, it's like, oh, coming up, you know, we have Corbin Burns, Zach Gallen, and Merrill Kelly. Like, those are three really dang good MLB starting pitchers, and we come out of here still with a series win. We faced great arms, great lineups, and just I think we can play with anybody. So just a good reminder there.
Jameson Taillon talking about the Cubs schedule and what it's been. This is the Spiegel and Holmes show. Nico Horner is going to join us in less than 10 minutes, so don't go anywhere. We'll catch up with Nico as the Cubs get ready to take on the Dodgers yet again. And it's a two-game series from Wrigley Field. Pre-game coverage begins at 6:05. Pat Hughes and Ron Coomer will be on the call. First pitch at 6:40 on the Southwest Airlines Cubs Radio Network.
Never before, Lawrence, have all three MLB wildcard teams been from the same division. It's only been a couple of years that they've done three wildcards in addition to three division winners.
But there's a legit chance of it being the National League West this year.
How about it, man? Right now it would be. Right now it would be by record, because that's all it is record. And, you know, then eventually you'd get to some tiebreakers. But right now, and, you know, it's not like they've all played the same games. I think 13-9 is what the D-backs are. And that bests the 13-10 that the Phillies are. The Braves all the way back at 9-13. Milwaukee at 12-11 are the closest. But right now it would be Padres, Giants, Diamondbacks as your three wild cards.
That's pretty good.
It's crazy, man. And looking in recent years, it's two from the NL East, one from the NL West in 22, 23, and 24. I guess with the unbalanced schedule, it's more statistically possible now because you don't beat up on each other with the 18-19 games a year.
I've been working through this as a baseball fan speaks. I want the old schedule back.
It's interesting.
I think that you should play more games inside of your division. Like, to me, that's the whole point of it. The whole point is like, okay, we dominated our division, hence we won the division.
It's the progression of this is hilarious. We were talking the other day, Shane, we were talking about Alvin Dark and his unfortunate history of racial commentary, but then like a lot of growth late in his life, which just makes for an interesting story.
We hope.
There apparently was.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's another story for another day. But I mentioned that his 1964 Giants went 90-72 and didn't make the playoffs. And you were like, what? Huh? Yeah, because for a while, baseball.
It was two teams.
It's two teams. World Series was just like, well, they were the best in that league, and they were the best in that league. And it's slowly gotten more and more watered down.
Hey, look, there is something to the idea of making the marathon more important, and that the championship season, it matters. Who was the best team? We were. Who were the best team over there? We were. Let's find out who the best team is overall. Let's play a 7-game or a 9-game series and let's figure this whole thing out. I'm not averse to doing that.
Well, it's
got, I'm here for it.
The money is.
I know. They'll never go back because of the money. You're 100% right, Shane. I just feel like with the schedule, though, I think that you should play more games in your division.
Well, but that would help to decide which team finishes atop the division. But if the three wild cards are just about best record, and that's all it is, the unbalanced schedule is actually more egalitarian to figure that out.
I agree.
Then there shouldn't be divisions. If you're going to make these schedules as even as they are and playing everybody, there just shouldn't be divisions.
Well, I can see
it should be 15 and 15.
I can see that argument because
or just top 30.
Yeah, I think it's going to happen eventually.
Yeah,
it's going to be like NBA.
Yeah,
just conference and conference.
Top 8 from each conference go in.
I hear you because no matter what, all three of those teams could have a better record than the Cubs who come out of the Central. All three wildcard teams could have a better record, and none of them would get to host in that first round.
If you're not going to play the teams in your division 17 times a year, between 17 and 19, whatever it was before the balanced schedules, then there's no need for divisions.
Yeah, I think there's an argument for it.
You could also, with this way, you could have a better structured postseason that truly rewards the division winner even more.
I think that I don't know if there's anything that is less respected than a team winning a division in baseball. Because it should be celebrated that what you do over 162, we lose sight of it completely as baseball fans as soon as we get to the playoffs. It's like, oh, man, a team won the division. Oh, they lost in the first round.
Good night, everybody.
And the season's a failure.
Hey guys,
and everyone has to be fired.
My dad agrees. He just texted me. I hear you, Shane. He agrees with the division thing.
Or did he just physically hear you?
Maybe he just hears me.
Right? You never know. You never know exactly what it is.
He might just be telling me, hey, I hear you right now.
I hear you as well. For the record, I hear you as well.
Make sure that we're going through the airwaves, you know? Like, every now and again, you need to check.
Maybe his radio broke and now it's fixed.
Listeners will often sometimes do us the service of being like, hey, guys, the Twitch stream is out. Hey, guys, something's wrong with the app.
Wow.
So the fact that your dad let you know that he was listening.
It's lovely.
I think it's great on whatever level you want to accept it at.
Yeah, it's really nice when people just have conversations with you while you're on the air. Like, it's just, and they're like, they know that they're there. Like, I've got a few listener friends like that that'll just reach out and hit me during the course of the show and be part of the conversation.
It's a beautiful thing.
And some of them, sometimes it's Shane's dad.
We appreciate it being Shane's dad. Nico is a little early. We thought we'd talk to him in a couple of minutes, but he's like, look, I got to get on the air so I can get off the air with these guys.
Well, no, he's got thoughts. He's got takes and he needs to deliver, perhaps.
Well, that's a good thing. Nico Horner now joining us here on The Score on the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circa app today. What's up, Nico? How you doing?
Doing pretty well. How are you guys?
We're well, man. We're well. We're excited for you guys to get another shot at the Dodgers. Like, this is, it's really weird that you guys have played the Dodgers so much and now you're not going to play them again until hopefully the league championship series.
Yeah, right. If you were to play them again in the playoffs, it would be like in 6 months or so. It's pretty wild when you think about it that way. I mean, I guess after this series, we'll have played them, 7 times of our 25 games or so. So, you know, break it down. It's a quarter of our games against the Dodgers so far, but weird schedule, but it's been fun.
So much has been made of the schedule. Toughest month for any team all season long is this one. How do you feel you guys are coming through in terms of the quality of the ball? The win, the record is very nice, but how's the quality of baseball you think you're playing?
It's been good. It's been good. I mean, I feel like it's a good thing when you feel like you have a solid record, but have also felt like you left some wins on the table. You know, it's a product of having leads in a lot of games. Like, you are going to blow some, I guess. But, I think the feeling internally isn't like, oh, my God, everything's perfect and we have this record. Like, I feel like we've left some wins out there. Maybe you just feel those more. But Yeah, the quality of baseball has been really good.
You got 2 days to let that Sunday game. There's one you could have won, right? There's a whole bunch of times and opportunities. I was sure you guys were gonna. The way you've been playing, the way that offense has been rolling, it's there haven't been many days where the hits didn't come. This was one of them.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I feel like especially when you get to the extra innings as the home team, I don't know if the numbers back it up, but it's the gut feeling is you have the advantage just with knowing how many runs you need and how that dictates some situations and things like that. But yeah, didn't pull that one out.
Walk us through your kind of emotional roller coaster at the end of Sunday where there's the play at first base and then there you make these incredible plays in the field and you come up with a big hit. What was that like for you to kind of have to refocus in to try and get yourself and your team an opportunity to win the game?
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of moments in that game that, you know, felt like they could have turned the game one way or another. I think just the ability to turn the page quickly and onto the next thing as best you can. And I think we've done that well as a group, too. I feel like anytime we've had a tough loss this year, we've responded pretty well the next day. Those are going to be inevitable in the season, and the response to them, I think, is just as, if not more significant.
The guys were giving me crap earlier, Nico, because I was there with my wife, and she stood up and applauded with fervor at your game-tying single, and happened to be caught on TV on the broadcast, and there's a picture of me right next to her. I'm sitting. How would you?
He didn't get up. He Spieggs just sat there, Nico.
I'll send it right now to Nico.
Yeah, please do. Text that to him.
It's ridiculous. Like it's one. It's our guy. It's yeah. Our guy coming through.
Yeah.
We hadn't won yet. He was holding out.
That's what I said. You take the lead. I am out of my chair. It's exactly what I said. Nico yeah. feels it.
Yeah.
You know.
His love is conditional, Nico. That's the problem. That is absolutely the problem.
No.
So you have that game on Sunday. How wild was Friday's game?
Yeah, I mean, from a player perspective, probably rather win that one 7-2 or something like that. But, yeah, it was a roller coaster to the extreme. And it was like one of those that they always post the win-loss probability roller coaster after the game. Things like that, and just crazy. I mean, it is important for a group to know that like you're capable of doing things like that. It's not what you set out to do, but one of those rare days where the wind's just blowing straight out at Wrigley, and it all breaks loose, and it feels like anything is possible, good or bad. And so, high stress, high excitement, high highs, low lows, definitely everything in that one.
Yeah, that one felt like one of those legendary Cubs games from the 70s or 80s where teams are putting up 20 spots, you know?
It's like, yeah, they're swinging 37-inch bats and hitting 86 mile an hour singles right in the air. They're launching balls.
you're saying they had it a little bit easier with their 87 mile an hour sinkers back in the day?
No, I mean, they were swinging big bats, and we've got all sorts of things to help us now. They didn't have it. Just like the videos of those games, it's just a different style of stuff going on.
That's interesting when you see that stuff. So what else do you see when you look at old legendary footage at Wrigley where you're like, what that seems odd?
The pitch framing is crazy looking. You got catchers catching the ball underhand in the strike zone. The outside corner is halfway into the other's batter's box. That's why it's like not as simple to say like they had it so easy. Like the strike zone is just insane then. I like watching the infielders. I mean, I feel like there was more ground balls in general then, so there's the infield play I feel like was even at more of a premium, just more contact, more ground balls, and so there's some cool stuff with that. Obviously Rhino is incredible, but yeah, it's fun to watch like an uncut just one of those old games. It's pretty cool. They play them on marquee sometimes, I feel like.
They do, but how would you have felt about, as a middle infielder, a lot of spikes at your chest and face?
Yeah. I know. You have to actually be on the base now, which makes a difference, but the slides at second base is a whole factor I don't even have to think about now, which I guess I'm grateful for, but man, they were playing a true contact sport then that we are not now.
You know who I really hope enjoyed himself on Friday and all the time, really, but Kyle Tucker. Really hope that guy's enjoying himself and falling in love because of the bigger picture, of course. But like, Can you tell us, is he enjoying, because he's a quiet guy. We don't hear from him a lot. Is he enjoying himself? Is he feeling the specialness that can be felt in a place like this?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's probably quiet with media and like pretty unlike even keel type of thing, but he's definitely talking in the clubhouse, and a guy that in a good way, he's not really showing up too different, whether he's having a lot of success or not. Like the level of concern in spring training when he wasn't getting hits was impressively low, in a great way. Like, he's a very confident guy that he's not, at least externally, riding the roller coaster at all, which is great from a guy in the middle of your lineup. But yeah, I mean, I think he's having a great time. He's hitting the ball well. He's on a good team. You know, personal decisions, got no clue on that, but I know he's happy to be here right now.
Of course, of course. Why is this offense so good right now? Second in OPS in baseball behind only the Yankees is pretty amazing. Why do you think it's clicking?
I mean, the production we've gotten from the catching position has been ridiculous, right? Like, it's probably I imagine it's the lowest producing position in baseball, and we've got basically MVP stats coming out of our catching yeah, position. So
pretty cool.
Anytime you have that, it's definitely changes the dynamic of the whole group. But I think the depth of it has been super impressive. You know, I feel like we've had almost every guy in our lineup win a game for us already, which is a pretty cool feeling, and just feels like everyone is having an impact in the variety of slug and base running and contact. And it's an offense that I don't think is too reliant on one particular thing or one person in a way that creates some sustainability. I think both makes it exciting what we've done and easy to believe in for the rest of the year.
It's an individual sport with team concepts. And so sometimes I wonder about, like, what are the things that can actually be humanized, where I look at, hey, this guy is having a really good run, and the lineup is working and clicking together. When are the moments when you feel like that is the case, that you guys are feeding off of each other? And when are the moments when you feel like, I'm on my own, it's me versus the pitcher when I go out there?
Yeah, I mean, I think the benefit we feel is just like you're often in positions where the pitcher's with his back against the wall. It feels like you're truly on offense and they're playing defense, versus sometimes it feels like the pitcher's kind of attacking your entire lineup. So I think that's where you kind of feed on each other in a way that, you know, you're facing a starter with guys on base all the time, and then the starter's out in the fourth or the fifth, and then you're facing middle relievers instead of the top end guys, and then you have the lead. And you never face the closer. And felt like last year we faced the closer every single game, even if it was, but we were winning, you know, it was a one-run game or something like that. So all that stuff just adds up over time, and we all benefit from quality at-bats from each other.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I used to think about the game as like, all right, got to take a ton of pitches. Pitches per plate appearance, baby. Let's get that number up and get that starter tired, and you get the soft underbelly of the opposing team's bullpen. But that doesn't really work anymore. Does it?
No.
Like, so is that why guys are being more aggressive now? Like, if you see a pitch, go for it these days.
Yeah, I don't know if we've been more aggressive as a group. It'd be interesting to see. I think, you know, it's the selectively aggressive Kyle Tuckers of the world that have the most success, that are always ready to hit, but also not leaving the strike zone. And that's incredibly hard to do. We all strive to do it every day. And you know, some of us are better at it than others. But yeah, I mean, the ability to slug and make contact and get on base, you know, that's the kind of the trifecta that the best in the game do. And I think collectively as a whole, as an offense, we do that pretty well.
So your teammate, Ian Happ, had very concise thoughts on the Bears draft. You know, we love that you guys are both on, and you're both on Tuesday. So earlier, the midday show asked him for his thoughts on the Bears draft.
As far as the draft goes, trust the Bears staff. Go get them. Believe in you.
So there you go. Would you like to further that? Do you have any thoughts on the Bears draft, Nico Horner?
Yeah, just be selectively aggressive, you know, just like really target upside, but don't reach outside of it too much. Just hunt for what's best for you, and, you know, don't let emotions get in the way. It's just whatever's next right in front of you.
Wow, that sounded like baseball philosophy.
It sounded better than what Ian did.
Yeah,
had we
sure.
asked Ian about the Masters, he'd have gone on for 10 minutes. About yeah, the Masters.
He'd be on and on.
Who was your pro football team and your college football team growing up?
I grew up a Raiders fan in Oakland. Once I moved, I couldn't really care less. And then, so like if I were to choose a team to win the Super Bowl at this point, it would be the Bears, just for, you know, seeing Chicago celebrate and all. It'd be amazing.
Oh, see, that's beautiful.
But yeah, college, I wasn't super invested in college football growing up. I mean, obviously rooted for Stanford with McCaffrey and the Rose Bowl and stuff. That was pretty awesome to see while we were there. But yeah.
All right, one more bit of tape to play for you, but we'll ask you a question first. Had Quentin Berry on the other day, and I loved talking to that guy. He's fun, man. I like Quentin.
Yeah.
Asked him, he's clearly a good cop on the coaching staff. I asked him who the bad cop is. Do you have any guess as to which coach he said really enjoyed playing the role of bad cop?
Bad cop on the staff. Not Flash.
All right. Here is Quentin Berry's answer.
Yeah, let's hear what he says.
Flash. Flaherty. Flaherty loves being a bad cop. He loves it. So it's good. He's great at what he does. He can get these guys going a little bit. So
see?
You got to have it.
I mean, I know where he's coming from. It's not like a – I think it's more provocative than, like, true bad cop. I feel like bad cop is the person that, like, takes on conversations that no one else wants to and this and that and, like – his is more just like a lot of hypothetical provoking of situations or things that lead to really good discussions that are often like a little testy. But I see where he's coming from.
So,
it's a good dynamic.
So I got to ask you about a moment I was able to see from the stands the other day, which was that.
While he was sitting.
Yeah, it's true. Thanks, Lawrence. But after you were out on the bases in extras and Pete was left there on first because you were out on a force out, you came into the dugout kind of frustrated, and it was Flash. It was Flaherty who, like, called you up to the top step and put his arm around you, and you guys were talking. And that didn't seem like a bad cop moment. That seemed like a very connective moment. So he's obviously got that tool in his conversational toolbox as well.
Yeah. We were talking about both the replay, cause he does all the like replay decision stuff, like communication on the phone and then some base running stuff from the previous play. But, that was one of those couple moments right there in that at bat that I felt really swung our opportunity to win that game.
But he's got, he wasn't bad copping with you then. He's got more than that.
Yeah, absolutely.
He
played recently. It's nice to have guys around who played.
Got to let Nico steal the base.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think, yes.
That's a thing.
Yeah.
That's a thing.
That's a good read by you.
Nico, have fun against the Dodgers over the next couple of days. Look like the weather's going to be pretty decent for you guys.
Yeah, so that's it's nice. Wind straight across. So lefties, oppo, righties, pull. Go from there.
We love it. Thanks so much, man. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, guys. Have a good one.
Thanks, man. You too.
It's Nico Horner.
He nailed it. It was Flash. I didn't know Ryan Flaherty was called Flash, but apparently everybody calls him that. And he's got some bad cops. So Quentin Berry, good cop. Ryan Flaherty, bad cop. We don't know who the black cop is.
Quentin Berry.
Oh, yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
It goes back to him. So he's both the good cop and the black cop.
Which is rare. It's rare in movie tropes. That is very rare for that to be the case.
Oh, now you got me thinking.
Yeah.
About those cop buddy films.
Yeah, it's the black cop is, that's why, that's the bit, Speaks. Like, that's why that guy is always overworked and overstressed.
No, but Tommy Lee Jones in...
I don't care!
Right. And in Men in Black, he was kind of the bad cop.
But they're not cops.
No, that's true.
You could make
a cop buddy movie.
You could make the argument of Axel being both the good cop and the black cop, but even still.
It's my favorite Dr. Seuss, by the way. Good cop, bad cop, one cop, black cop. Controversial book at the time, but yes. I'm glad he wrote it.
Nico says he's a big fan of Steen now. I don't know if he wasn't before, but he responded right away when he hung up because he uses that phone for Zoom. He says, big fan of hers now.
We could go Michael Winslow in Police Academy.
Oh, he was the fun cop.
Good cop, black cop, right?
Well, yeah, fun cop.
Fun black cop, black. And that's very rare.
And how about Bubba Smith as well?
He was the good cop? Come on.
He was the bad cop.
Come on now. He walked in.
He was the big cop.
Yes, he was.
Good cop, fun cop, bad cop, black cop.
You got to watch We Own the City, the David Simon show on Max with my guy John Bernthal. There was a lot of bad cops on that show of all colors.
any good cops on there?
Bernthal is a very intense individual.
He's in like a buddy movie with Ben Affleck.
Yeah, The Accountant too.
Yeah,
or The Accountant Squared by how it's written.
Ugh.
That's how it's written.
I'll watch it though.
Yeah, I know you will.
Yeah, I'll watch it too.
Bernthal seems happy. It's called The Payday One, I believe.
He's earned it for that stuff that he's been doing with Punisher. Man.
Bernthal?
Yeah.
And he was great on The Bear. I mean, if Bear's coming back, right? We got a season 3 of The Bear coming?
They filmed season 2 and season 3 at the same time, so yes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I hope there's a little more comedy in it this time. Count me as one guy who wants a little more lightness.
Okay.
All right.
All right. I've noted. Glad I got that in.
And we're glad that you got that note.
Thanks, Lawrence.
In as well.
And you're always going to be the good cop to me. And the black cop.
Yep. It's rare. But often I'm the bad cop. And it's fine. I wear it.
You don't want to wear it, though. Yeah, I can be the bad cop sometimes.
Because in real life, you know.
Yeah.
I am the good cop.
I want to be the black cop someday.
No, that's not allowed.
Come on, man.
Nope. Not a thing.
It's too bad.
Not a thing.
Maybe later.
Nope.
Get a few more of these books under our belt. Does that have anything to do with it?
No. Not. I can't believe you put those things together.
I'm just wondering, like, you know, if there's ever a moment where I'm entitled.
Wow. This is how it happens, huh? A little success and then all of a sudden
all of a sudden you're Ted Danson and Whoopi Goldberg at a party.
Yep.
Danger. Yeah, good point.
It's a bad moment
can't have
for
that.
Ted.
Oh, yeah.
How he somehow is totally recovered from it.
Completely and utterly recovered, like Alvin Dark. You know what I mean?
Well, no. There's a whole bunch of problems there. There was a bear who wrote a poem about Brian Piccolo.
No, hold on.
No?
A Chicago bear?
Yeah.
Chicago bear wrote a poem?
Someone at Hallis Hall, and it's not the person that you're thinking.
Oh, boy.
Because we're used to one person at Hallis Hall either having a poem or a song. It wasn't this person. It was someone else.
Uh-oh.
Next on The Score.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for limited time and subject to change, max one offer per account.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework. Founded in 1964, Fremont Bank understands the difference 60 years can make. It's the difference between serving a family business and being dedicated to a family business as a family business. The difference between looking at spreadsheets and looking at possibilities. The difference between deposits that go into a vault and deposits that go back into your community. So what difference does 60 years make? All the difference in the world. Fremont Bank. Here for you. Here for good.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Uncertainty. Self-doubt. Stressing about not knowing where to start. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Word art. Sorry, live, laugh, lovers. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing deals for members. Hass avocados or mangoes, 4 for $5 or $1.25 each. Signature Farms boneless, skinless chicken breasts or thighs, buy one, get one free of equal or lesser value when you buy two. And enjoy an exclusive digital deal on Sargento shredded or sliced cheeses. 5 to 8 ounce selected varieties, $1.97 each, limit 4. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
Spiegel and Holmes Show Flashback. Flashback. Flashback.
I love Brian Piccolo. And I'd like all of you to love him too. And tonight, hit your knees. Please ask God to love him.
Man, I gotta tell you, Lawrence, I'm sure there's some people in our listening audience who maybe don't even know who Brian Piccolo is, and we don't have to, like, define all of that. Look it up. It's a legendary story.
That's a fun movie.
And the original Brian song is what, like 74 minutes or something like that?
Yeah.
It's worth you watching.
It really is.
And our friends are in it.
Yeah, our friends are in it. Doug Buffone and Ed Obradovich are both in it. They have tremendous, tremendous acting moments, especially for OB.
As themselves.
Oh, God. It just tremendous stuff.
It's a great man cry movie.
Oh, dude. I still remember seeing like an episode, I think it was 2020 or one of those shows long, long ago. And they were talking about a scientific experiment to see if tears from cutting an onion were the same as tears from sadness, you know?
And
they used Brian's song as a way to instigate the sadness so they could measure the tears against the physical effect of the onion tears.
Interesting.
So that's how triggering Brian's song is for dudes of a certain vintage.
I mean, now there are a lot of movies that reach me in that way where I emote for all sorts of like personal reasons.
Sure, me too.
But overall, like that one, the other one that I always point to is the movie Warrior. And that movie is... I think that movie is amazing. It's about two brothers that are in an MMA competition, and you know, both of them have like interesting, they have an interesting relationship. And the part that always gets me is that one of them is a former Marine, and his story of being a Marine is a little kind of out there, and no one really knows. And then they find out, and he comes out, and the Marines start singing. I'm like, oh my God. I'm like, all right.
Turn on the waterworks.
I'm just going to start crying right now.
Last movie I cried in was, I cried at the end of Bull Durham. I cried at the end of Bull Durham.
Sure.
at the Music Box. But any movie with a baseball in it, like, you know, even just a baseball, if it's just on a shelf.
If it's just Slider from the old Fox show. Hey,
oh my
this
God.
Is how you throw a curveball.
That absolutely kills me. Absolutely, just anything.
Just the Twib Notes music.
Oh, man.
Brings you to tears.
Especially the closing theme. Dun, 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 dun.
I mean, it's very heroic.
It really is.
That's a very heroic piece of music.
All right, so Brian
and
Piccolo.
And there's that part in Goodfellas where Karen flushes the cocaine down the toilet. I sob every time because that's all they had.
Yeah,
Karen,
yeah.
Why would you do that?
No, still, I kind of an overrated movie, I think, still.
Goodfellas or Brian's song?
Goodfellas.
Yeah. Shane, what movie makes you cry?
Shrek.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Especially when they do Funky Town.
My favorite moment in Shrek is when like the little like hello dancing thing in front of the town happens and the donkey's like, let's do that again. Wants to see it again.
Or the first 10 minutes of Up.
Oh my God.
It's just like,
can't watch.
I did not sign up for this, sir.
What are you doing to me?
I did not sign up for this.
And then there's The Notebook, which just makes me angry. I get really angry at that. I got angry the first time I saw it.
Kind of like Titanic?
Yeah, it was just like so manipulative. Yeah. Like, how dare you?
I get turned on in The Notebook.
Well, there's some good scenes.
Yeah, well, James Garner is something. I get it. I totally get it.
The Rockford Files. Anyway.
Anywho, Brian Piccolo Award presentation today, and it went to Roma Dunze and TJ Edwards.
You get a veteran and a rookie. That's how the award is given out.
And apparently there was a poem that was said. You've referenced it a couple times. For anybody who doesn't know, Was it Brian Urlacher receiving the Piccolo Award years ago?
Maybe the Ed Block Courage Award, maybe.
It might have been. But either way, one of the McCaskies. Which McCaskey?
Patrick.
Okay.
Who kind of takes after his dad, right? Because wasn't his dad a lounge singer?
Yes. Yes, it's true. But I wasn't sure if it was Patrick or if it was Larry or Moe or Shemp McCaskey. I wasn't sure.
Urlacher. Fills gaps and makes tackles. Orange and blue cover too. You have won the Piccolo.
The Piccolo. You've won the Piccolo.
and so I feel like
I didn't remember that was the close. That's perfect.
It wasn't the close, Speaks.
Oh,
he kept going.
He went on for like another 45 seconds.
Did he really?
Yeah, yes. It's a whole thing.
Oh my God.
Yeah, he's a wackadoodle.
Clearly. But today, Tanny, you reported. Who is this?
This is Ben Johnson. So I saw the email from Chris Emma come through. It's like, Ben Johnson recited a poem at today's Piccolo Awards ceremony. I was like, oh God, here we go. Boy. I was like, is this where it goes south? Like, this is, he's on the express train to Matt Nagy Town if he's doing stuff
like
this.
Won't you take me to Matt Nagy Town?
And so I tweeted the group thread, or I texted the group thread all the red flags, because this is where it starts. Because, you know, Ben Johnson's feeling it. He's at Wrigley Field. He's throwing nasty pitches
honeymoon.
Over the plate.
100% honeymoon.
And then you start to feel yourself, just like guys in radio who start talking about doing things after getting a number one book. I was worried when I saw...
Two straight number one books, by the way.
That's right. Thank you.
6 months of dominance. Thank you.
So when I saw that Ben Johnson recited a poem today, I was like, oh no. But actually, after listening to it, and you guys can be the judge after, but he began the Piccolo Awards ceremony today by shouting out Pat McCaskey, who we just heard from singing there, and possibly we'll hear more of that in a second, hear the rest of it. But he talked about Pat McCaskey and went on to recite a poem about Brian Piccolo.
You know, 3 months ago, I walked in the building for the first time, and one of the first questions I needed answered was, who is this guy going to work out in his short shorts and his headband? And that was Pat McCaskey. And I'll never forget, one of the first things out of your mouth was how special this award ceremony was and if I could be involved in it in some way. And so thank you for having me here today. You're also renowned on the streets for being a poet and a songwriter. I'm a numbers guy, Pat, and so I had to use a little outside help, but I do have a poem I would like to share to honor Brian Piccolo. Is that okay? Okay. It's called More Than a Jersey. He wore the C upon his chest, not just in games, but in each test. A bear by number, name and grace, but more than that, a steady face. He wasn't picked in any round or fame, no headlines danced around his name. Yet still he fought and still he rose, a quiet strength the whole team knows. With courage burning deep and true, he gave his all in all he'd do. Not just in wins, but every day he led with heart in every play. He stood for loyalty and trust, a friend, a guide, both firm and just. He showed that greatness doesn't shout, but lifts others up day in and day out. His life was marked by dedication, a model for each generation. Each practice moment, snap and stride, he gave the game his soul and pride. When illness came, he met the storm with strength that moved beyond the norm. And though his race was far too brief, he left behind a bold belief that love is real and brotherhood, that fighting back is doing good, that joy and grit can coexist, that every name deserves a list. Today we see his spirit rise in steadfast hands and fearless eyes. And though he's gone, his story grows, a legacy that never slows. Thank you. So thank you to Pat and the McCaskey family for allowing me to introduce this year's recipients.
I thought the poem was actually pretty good.
Efforting Shel Silverstein.
But
I thought that was quite lovely.
But the additions that we made, I think, put it over the top.
Yeah, that music, I thought the music was from the Bears.
I thought it was from the Masters.
He was standing in Butler Cabin as he delivered that.
So here's the thing.
So that's from Tanny. That music was from Tanny, to be clear.
Let me just say, I know that we were having a little fun with it. Tanny producing and remixing that makes it less cringe. It makes it beautiful because the words are already pretty good. Mm-hmm. And if he's just up there doing it with no score, then it's like, oh, that's pretty good. But with the score added to it by Chris Tannehill.
That's what we do here at the score.
That's pretty top-notch stuff.
I got to say, I think I don't know who the outside help was. I don't know. Did he mention who gave him the outside writing help?
I'm going to try to find out because I'm going to send him Tanny's version. I'm going to make sure he gets that, and maybe he'll tell us.
I thought that was quite lovely. I thought it was like genuine and heartfelt and thoughtful. And Pat asked him to be a part of it, and he's like, what can I do to be a part of it? This means a lot to the family, means a lot to the whole organization. What could I do? And he's a head football coach who chose to,
Said, hey, I'm out of my element a little bit here.
Let me get some help and do this. But and this would be a nice addition.
I think that's actually really well done by Ben Johnson on all fronts.
The honeymoon continues.
It continues.
He's not. He's not on a unfortunate ride to Nagy Town. Don't you force him to Nagy Town. Don't do it. Red Flags has not entered the building.
Unless he dresses up as George Halas. Then then we will know.
Or Ditka.
Either one is a bad choice. Just be the first Ben Johnson. We're all good with that.
Yeah. It's pretty. That's pretty amazing. All right. Speaking of Ditka, a football player, a potential draftee, got a call out this morning with a nod to Ditka, and
gotcha.
I really liked this conversation.
I bet you did because it's the guy that you think they should draft. Yeah,
I think it is. This from the morning show. We'll come back and play it for you as we talk Bears draft here on the Score.
Esa-Pekka Salonen's final concerts as music director of the San Francisco Symphony bring legendary artists and epic music to Davies Symphony Hall, culminating in Mahler's electrifying Second Symphony. Tickets at sfsymphony.org.
If you love your customers, you have to try RingCentral. No matter the size of your business, every call, every text, every meeting, every customer conversation matters. With RingCentral, you get a reliable business phone, a modern contact center, and built-in AI across every conversation, so you can focus on the moments that matter. See for yourself at ringcentral.com.
RingCentral, intelligent communications you can trust.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Zoe. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Spiegel and Holmes.
Check Todd out at The Ringer. He's doing incredible stuff with the Todd McShay Show.
You guys are the not messing around crew. I like it.
Afternoons on the Score.
Bears fans, number 89, the coach, Mike Ditka.
So Ditka gets a tangential message in this, Lawrence Holmes.
Gosh.
Tangential mention, I should say. Ross Tucker, friend of the station, friend of the show, was on this morning, a Pennsylvanian, talking about the tight ends with Mully and Haw, and he says that Colston Loveland is good, but he hopes the Bears land Tyler Warren.
I mean, I've been watching Tyler Warren since he was in high school, and gosh, if you want to talk about a guy that has Chicago Bear written all over, I mean, he's gonna bring back memories of Ditka. I watched because I live here in central Pennsylvania. I used to do like some Penn State stuff, like some local Penn State radio. So I watched his high school video. It's hilarious. He's quarterback and nobody can tackle him, but he can run around and whatever. But then when they get near like in the red zone, they would move him to receiver and they would just throw him fade balls, and he would just dunk on the top of these poor corners' heads trying to cover him. And then I don't know if you guys know this, but he wore 44 at Penn State because his dad said, I want you to run the ball like this guy.
Yes.
And made him watch John Riggins
highlights. Yes, that's a great anecdote.
Kidding me?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh. I mean, I love everything about Tyler Warren, and let's put it this way. He would become, like, an incredible Bears fan favorite very, very quickly. And this is an important thing. Ben Johnson is tremendous, okay, at utilizing a guy's skills the way they're best suited. He would get the ball to Warren on the move so he can get that run-after-catch stuff and really be a fun player for the Bears.
So that's the part that got me, because I've been thinking about the guy anyway, and you know it, yes. Mr. Validation was feeling it this morning as I heard that. But they don't have a real slot receiver right now. And Tyler,
they've got like four guys
who can do it,
who can maybe do it, and maybe they're made better because of what Ben Johnson can put together. But you're right.
So the idea of giving him Tyler Warren to use as a weapon out of the slot for some of the time as a tight end who is incredibly difficult to cover, and then Cole Kmet can be your inline tight end, who, by the way, can really catch passes as well.
You can mess around with a lot of stuff formationally, man, if you get Tyler Warren.
That's the thing. The freedom that it gives you to mess around and weaponize your offense the way that we know he likes to. I'm very excited at the possibility, and yeah, like, not having landed on an edge rusher that is a lockdown pick there at 10, I'm feeling Tyler Warren in the biggest of all possible ways for this Bears draft.
So, you know how I was kind of playfully saying, gosh.
'Twas the night before Christmas, and all through the house, not a creature was staring except for me, Ditka Claus.
And that used to be a way that North and Jiggets would end transition.
Coach.
Anytime someone would mention that meant that transition was over and they were ready to go on do new stuff.
It's very true.
I thought I would share with you, because we do like to share when our alums are out here doing great work. I got this note. We are proud to honor Dan Jiggets with a prestigious induction this year. He's going to be inducted into the Silver Circle honor. That's through the Chicago Midwest chapters of the Emmys. So Jiggs is going to go into the Silver Circle this year. So congratulations to DJ.
Me and Jiggs, what's up there tomorrow?
Oh!
Oops, we had a little accident here. Let's help her up, guys. Give her help. And you know what? I hope she's okay. It's slippery over there.
Oh, man.
That's the moment. That's the moment that they focused on.
I think probably they were focusing on Dan's long television career.
Career and long distinguished radio career. The adult in the room with one of the all-time children in the history of the business.
I can relate. See what I mean? Like it never changes where that pairing has to be.
Right. Dan was clearly the good cop and the black cop.
Yeah. Yeah. He's the only one.
My favorite part about Dan is he has a cell phone, but he keeps it in his car. So anytime that I text him, he gets back to me like 4 days later and then says, just call my house phone.
You got
to
call the landline with Jiggs. Let's call the landline with Jiggs. Let's talk to Jiggs.
We can do that.
Let's congratulate him.
They've been having him on Channel 9.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. Lauren does like a segment. I think they do a podcast too.
Oh, God. That's great. That's great that Lauren Jiggets does that with her dad. That's awesome.
LJ's good people, man. Real good people.
Well, Dan is good people, so Apple doesn't fall far.
I'm not surprised. It's a really strong family, and seeing DJ with his grandkids is hysterical because they have a lot of energy. And he's like, what is going on with all these kids up here? So shout out to DJ for being inducted into the Silver Circle this year. That's a really awesome honor, and he is deserving of it, no doubt. When we come back, let's talk more Bears. Let's go back and let's really drill down on Ryan Poles and him talking about the draft. You want to know what the Bears GM thinks about your team? You'll find out next here on The Score.